I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Charlie O'Leary. He's Executive Director of the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, and Jan Willem Janssens, who's former Director of Earthworks. He's currently an ecological consultant, and Kathy Holian, Santa Fe County Commissioner. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So we're here to talk about something which is actually kind of tricky to talk about on the radio. It's called the Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative. And the point of this document, this phenomenon, is basically to do smart conservation and smart development in the Galisteo watershed. Let's start with you, Jan Willem. What is this thing?
This thing is, in fact, a set of thoughts and recommendations based on maps. And the maps, again, followed an entire study of many, many years done by a suite of partners interested in different forms of conservation. Conservation of archaeological sites, of wildlife, of water, of scenic viewsheds, to identify what really the landscape-based quality of life is in the Galisteo Basin that then helps us identify which areas we really want to preserve and which resources we want to work on with agencies and landowners and bring on the place of consciousness of the county and anybody else who has a role in planning the future of a piece of land.
Now, is this initiative a set of laws, rules, regulations?
No, this is a plan. It is not an ordinance. In order to actually become a set of laws, it would have to be passed as an ordinance by the Santa Fe County.
So what you and all of you did, and the reason that I'm doing a show on this, is that I find it absolutely fascinating and also really important that when you start with the idea, you know, we've got some wonderful land here, some wonderful terrain, archaeological sites, views, watershed, wildlife, and people, and we want to preserve this in a way that works for everybody, how do we do it? It turns out that the answer to how do we do it is an incredibly complex problem that involves a lot of different people working together, a lot of coalitions of different kinds of people working together, and solving problems where people have a lot of different interests all at the same time. I mean, how did you do it?
Well, I think one of the part of that answer is that we brought a lot of people together. And I think it was very important to try and bring as many voices together that have an interest in the Galisteo Basin and the Galisteo watershed to hear what's important to the residents of the area and, as you said, the folks that enjoy a lot of the what we call conservation values that are part of that landscape. So I like to think of this as sort of a living document, that it's a conversation that's now started and is going to be very useful in how we make decisions about the future of this landscape. You know, when this was first started several years ago, the real estate boom was in full swing, and I think there was a lot of concern about sort of loving our environment to death with people moving in and a lot of homes being built and just a lot of activity, a lot of conversion of the natural landscape to neighborhoods and other uses instead of just nature and the natural world. And so this document, this conversation, tries to help direct what do we want the future to look like.
And so the problems you were setting out to deal with, I think we've kind of talked about sprawl and conservation and water and wildlife and things like that. So what does the plan actually say? What is it?
The plan focuses basically on prioritizing areas for conservation and for ecological restoration. The recommendations are basically a list of how to do that, how to work with the different forms of land ownerships, and that can be private landowners, it can be State Land Office, BLM, Forest Service, Santa Fe County, all the entities that have something to say or have certain regulations in place that offer possibilities for identifying what the suitability is, either for, say, ex-urban development or for some form of conservation. That's basically what the report does, But what it does implicitly, and that's what you said too, Charlie, is it basically highlights what people think the values are of the different resources on the landscape. That is, of course, extremely difficult, and therefore it was necessary to take a lot of time and talk with a lot of people and to make that in some way visible. So, and we used maps to do that. And the how to do that, again, is an entire technical story. We may get into it a little later. But these maps by themselves are a tool, then, to make people aware of where these values are and how they stack up in a certain place, so that you then can make a decision like, ah, here we have a lot of things that people value highly. Well, what shall we do with it? And what are the tools to either protect it or give it some meaning and some, maybe even link it to local jobs, local businesses?
I would like to add that one of the most important things about doing this plan and going through this process is it's provided a roadmap for how to do planning in other areas of the county. And it's important to note that the values that are considered important in any given area are unique, and they can be different.
What are some of those values? Let's talk about
that.
Well,
of course, in the case of the Galisteo Basin, we're concerned about preserving our natural resources, preserving our historical sites, preserving our watershed, and that certainly is true for other areas in the county as well, but those sites and those things that people highly value are going to be different from one area to the next. In some areas, it's their historical community that they want to preserve, for example.
So a set of maps forms the basis of this whole plan. When you look at those maps, what are the boundaries of the area that you're talking about, and how much of the land within it is publicly versus privately owned?
Okay. The Galisteo watershed is basically bounded by, like most bowls and watersheds, by higher areas, because the water flows from these higher areas to a center, and that is then the Galisteo Creek. And these higher areas are the Thompson Peak and Glorieta Baldy on the northeast side, and then it runs over Glorieta and Romesa on the southeast side, and the escarpment of the Estancia Basin to the south, Ortiz Mountain in the southwest, and then down to the Rio Grande at Santo Domingo Pueblo. And on the north side, it runs from the flanks of Glorieta Baldy down to Arroyo Hondo and the heights of San Marcos, Cerrillos Hills, and La Bajada, and then down to Santo Domingo. It is about 470,000 acres. So it is, with that, an area that is ecologically quite self-contained. And the land ownership is about 70% private land. Of that, a little less than half is maybe a handful of very large ranches of 20, 30 to 80,000 acres each. And then there is a significant amount of Forest Service land, BLM land, state land, and a piece of land managed by the Army Corps for the Galisteo Dam on the west side.
Now, when you have all these different folks, the different kinds of public land that you just mentioned, and ranchers, and then individuals with smaller pieces of land, and potentially developers and all of that, what are the conflicts that come up in terms of their interests in how to use that land and how that land should be regulated?
I think there can be, a lot of different ideas about how folks want to use the land, from landowners that want to keep it in ranching and want to continue with perhaps more of a traditional way of life, to newer landowners that perhaps want to develop part of their property. So there's a whole mix of uses. There's folks that want to use it for recreation. There's people that want to provide for the wildlife and look at ways to enhance the landscape to improve wildlife habitat, or again, improve maybe water quality and ecological processes. So when you start to get a lot of those different uses together and a lot of different people with different ideas and different time frames and different backgrounds, you start to get a pretty complicated mix about the future of an area. And I think what we're finding is it used to be that some of these areas felt like they were outside of town, or somehow removed from the rest of the community. And while we definitely respect our private property rights in the West, we're finding that it's really hard to look at these parcels in a vacuum. It's hard to look at them independently, but really the best way to achieve a lot of these goals is to look at them as interconnected pieces and part of the landscape. And so that's where we really need to be able to include a lot of different voices and have a process for communicating with one another. And I think ultimately what we're hopeful about is that through these conversations, everybody will actually be able to achieve their goal to some degree, that we'll have smarter development, that perhaps we'll build communities where people will want to live more, we'll have better restoration of the environment, and so on and so forth.
And I would just like to add that that will really help us in the county to have those conversations, because a lot of times these conflicts come up in the county when a developer comes forward with a proposed development, and then the people in the community only find out about it when it comes in front of the County Development Review Committee, and they go nuts because that's not what they want to have happen. So what we want to do in the county is to encourage these conversations before the developments are brought in front of us.
I think the fundamental conflict of seeing our lives and our property as interconnected on the one hand and as our own on the other is, I mean, it's one of the conundrums of the time we live in. And it's one of the conundrums of being an individualistic society where individual rights are and property rights are really paramount, and there's a lot of good in that on the one hand, and being part of an ecosystem. So in a place like the Galisteo Basin, you have not only a watershed, but you've got, and we've talked about this with you, Jan Willem, before, wildlife migration corridors. What is, and a wildlife migration corridor, I mean, if you've got elk or other animals moving north or moving south seasonally, they don't care what the property boundaries are.
Exactly, yeah. And so it is also then to look at what the possibilities are for making that migration possible. So important to talk with people who own property in that corridor. So with the Santa Fe Conservation Trust and Earthworks in Santa Fe County, we've been working for really the last 10 years to actually understand what people's values are. And we have had so many community meetings, on the ground restoration activities. And these meetings and activities were just not a purpose on their own. They were really to build connection between people and the land and to hear from them what they value. And that led us in 2004 and 2005 to have a series of meetings where we could formulate what the vision is of most people in the Galisteo Basin for what where they want to see the landscape go and their community. And that led to a vision statement that later was picked up by Santa Fe County in the sustainable growth management process. And that process was repeated in different parts of Santa Fe County. And once you see, you could say, the common ground between most of the landowners, then you have a doorway opened where you can start talking about that common ground and what that, how that can help achieve, say, certain forms of development or certain forms of services or certain forms of preservation of amenities, you could say, that are these values that people want to preserve. Because there are, for instance, artists in the Galisteo Basin who really want to have chosen to live there or have lived there for many generations and now want to stay there because their sculpture work or their painting or photography is directly related to the peace of that landscape or the light or the view sheds and the visitors that come to check out the art tours that are being held there. Or there are horse boarding businesses that can only be there because county regulations and the space that is there and the quiet for their horses is there to have that kind of opportunity.
Or the movie making industry.
Exactly, yeah. So between all those people, we gradually found some form of common ground. And I think that helps us then pursue some of those goals and identify how we then can proceed with certain landowners to put certain conservation practices in place.
And so what are those conservation practices that you're putting in place?
Well, one of them is, Charlie can talk to us about that.
One is through the use of a tool we call a conservation easement or conservation agreement, where we're working with landowners who are interested in essentially retiring development rights on their property in support of conservation values. So, for example, they would be interested in preserving open space, keeping an area open. Typically, that's along some of the waterways, along the creeks or the arroyos, where we know wildlife like to utilize the land. So what we'll do if, for example, a landowner is interested in maybe doing some limited development, we'll look at siting a structure away from the water sources so that there's not these incompatible uses. So that's just one tool that's used. Right now we've got over 5,000 acres under conservation just through the Santa Fe Conservation Trust as part of the Galisteo Basin. We've got a goal of 50,000 acres. And as Jan Willem said, we've been having conversations with landowners and really trying to help them bring a voice to why they want to preserve the Galisteo Basin. What is it that they want to conserve out there? And these sets of maps and this plan really helps to bring a voice to why they think an area is special. Well, this helps to actually bring a little bit of vocabulary to that.
I'll just add, Mary Charlotte, full disclosure, my husband and I have land on Glorieta Mesa, which contains some of the headwaters for the Galisteo River. And we have put a conservation easement on 500 acres of our land up there.
Which means it can never be developed.
Well, it can be developed, but only in a very limited way.
Meaning?
Well, we have two parcels of land up there, and we could, in principle, put one house on each. But if we were to develop it to its full potential, there could be four or five houses on each piece of land.
Oh, okay.
So other examples are that, Kathy, you, for instance, are an example of, besides the conservation easement, also being very much engaged in putting certain land stewardship and care practices on the ground, certain forms of forest thinning, certain ways of excluding grazing or only using grazing in a very specific way, restoring of wetlands and springs, applying certain ways of road maintenance and road management that manage runoff so that you minimize erosion and storm flooding. And there are many other landowners that do that, and that we're gradually, through Earthworks Institute in the past, have approached through projects, or they have come to us. And so there are definitely many landowners right now that are interested in these practices and are working with us or other organizations in town to implement such things. I recently was with a landowner in San Marcos who really is wildly enthusiastic to have one of very few rare wetlands in the Galisteo Basin that she really wants to preserve and make an educational area where people can visit and see, like, wow, we have a wetland here.
And there's birds who
exactly
live or stop by on it.
And that wetland is just not only beneficial for water resources locally and wildlife, but that it is an infiltration zone that helps give water to the dam in Cerrillos so that people there have maybe some more drinking water over time. So it has a much greater impact to a much larger community. And then we're in touch with these people in Cerrillos to really communicate about what the results are of our wetland restoration work there in San Marcos. So it's a big scope.
And we can't reiterate too many times the meaning of the term ecosystem services.
Well, yeah, so basically, nature provides so many benefits to us, from water purification to water storage, flood control, just the fiber that we can use for products. And if we can find out how those benefits of nature can be turned into a product that eventually people pay for, so that a certain fraction of that is being put back into the care of those resources, then we actually are very far on our way to maintaining those benefits. And in this country, that is still a very difficult process. But if you go to other countries, that is really established in the form of regulations or even in market procedures, so that siphoned off from the utilization, you could say exploitation of those resources to preserve them in the long run.
I think because our country is just so big, we haven't yet quite gotten it through our heads that we really can, if we leave the market to do its own thing, completely ruin an area. We can completely ruin the environment. We can take an area and make urban sprawl that eventually destroys property values, or we can ruin a landscape in such a way that nobody wants to live there, and we've got dirty water coming out of our taps. And, well, you're European. I guess you guys are, what, a couple of decades ahead of us?
I don't know. I've left the Netherlands 20 years ago, but I think in some ways certain things have started there decades earlier. Yes, yeah.
I think it's very easy for us to live sort of insulated from the environment these days, and so we can be in our homes and we can import water and import food, and you know we think we can get along without the outside world, but you know it's much more difficult to do that, and I think it's a lot less fulfilling for a lot of us, and I think we're sort of seeing that happen as well. So that, you know, the interconnectedness of us and our environment is so crucial to quality of life, and that's one of the things, you know, our subtitle is Quality Life at a Crossroads for the plan here, and I think that speaks well to what we're trying to do here.
And I think that that's why it's so important in these land restoration projects to bring the young people in to participate in that so they understand what's at stake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since they're the ones who are going to have to live here.
One thing I wanted to add is actually the positive things that actually are happening already, because this plan has really helped influence certain decisions in the last 5 years. And the initial plan started in 2005, 2006, and then when the conversations about oil and gas drilling started in the Galisteo Basin, we already had made our maps, and we had collected so much information that when we presented that to Santa Fe County and the governor's office here, that they said, wow, we can use this. And they didn't know that these mapping layers existed, and that if you add them up in specific places and overlay them on the locations where oil and gas drilling was going to happen or proposed, that they realized that wetlands and archaeological sites and flood zones and wildlife corridors were going to be impacted, and that we, of course, didn't know enough as to what the real damage would be, and therefore they said, well, okay, we use this now to put a moratorium on it so that we can study this more. And that helped us really put together the oil and gas ordinance in 2008 and started off with a sustainable land development plan, where we started looking at what is technically called the suitability, whether a piece of land is ready and properly used for either development or certain forms of conservation that then by themselves are not just conservation and walking away from it, but they are important, as I said, for other forms of economic growth, like for artists or for horse boarding or for certain forms of development that actually are good or better next to a nice piece of open space.
The oil and gas ordinance that we have is tough and I think also pretty reasonable.
Yes, it is. It really is actually a model for the nation. People come to Santa Fe County all the time to ask about how they can implement something similar in their area. I think it's really groundbreaking, the ordinance that we have.
What does it basically say?
Well, the underpinning of the ordinance is this concept of a land suitability analysis. So in any area where a developer would want to come in and actually drill, and even a wildcatter who wants to investigate whether there are resources there to be exploited, would have to go through a land suitability analysis first. And how intensely they can develop an area is totally based upon what that land is like, how sensitive it is. So in other words, if you were in a wetlands, you can't drill in the wetlands. You would have to drill in another place and then drill horizontally over to those wetlands if that's really what you wanted to do.
So it's really looking at piece of land by piece of land, bit by bit, where is development most suitable? And what are the special places? Where can we catalog the special places and make sure that we take care of those?
I think something that's interesting about this, and as I'm listening to you all talk about this, we're talking about the Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative with Charlie O'Leary, Jan Willem Janssens, and Kathy Holian. It seems to me that it transcends, to a large extent, ideology or party politics or things like that, and really goes to the heart of questions like, what are our values? What is this land for? How is it being used? How has it been damaged in the past? How can it be restored for all of us? And things like that, which are really the big questions that affect every single one of us, no matter what our ideologies are.
I think you're right. We have tried to keep this outside politics. And of course, people have differing values and views as to how land will, what the value of land is, and how they feel that control needs to be exerted over it. But we wanted to open that for conversation, because I think in our contemporary society, and especially in the future, everybody is benefiting from land in some way. Water flows up and down, and although the relationship of water flowing from top to bottom is one thing, erosion goes from the bottom to the top, and a dispersal of invasive species or whatever you have, and that has all... It all hangs together. It's all related. So people, we hope, see their responsibility over time in the values that they have and that their neighbors may have. And that actually, if they work together with a neighbor, whether it's a private neighbor or an institutional public neighbor, that actually by working together, often in a congenial way, certain common goals can be achieved that are eventually good for everyone. And I strongly believe that, and I hope that with an approach like we've tried to describe in this document, and that is gradually now being followed by the county and others, that we can continue that conversation and bring everybody in.
Now, this is a plan that will be implemented, or does it have to be passed as an ordinance, or what happens next?
Well, what we have done so far is that we have passed a resolution, and this passed unanimously in the county commission. And the resolution more or less recognizes that this way of doing planning is an important model for how we can plan in other areas of the county. And it also actually supports county staff using this method of planning in the future. Now, whenever we do planning, then we have to actually put in place code to implement that plan. That's another process.
And a big challenge, no doubt.
Oh, yes. And a political challenge, too.
Yeah.
You know, and as Jan Willem said, you know, we wanted to leave the politics out of this. I think that, you know, to the extent that that is possible, this plan is already being used. And the great thing about it is... there's enough interest in the Galisteo Basin from landowners and other stakeholders that as we published this at the end of last year, we've been disseminating, we've been getting lots of requests, the county's been very interested in it, because there's a lot of great information in there that can be used by anyone who's interested in seeing some of the land out there conserved, particularly landowners. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, we've been partnering with landowners to conserve over 35,000 acres of land, and that's all been by voluntary relationships. So I think once we're able to make a case and about why a particular piece of land or an area is important, the people understand that, and they want to be a part of something bigger than them. And so the conservation of land is often what folks can get excited about. And let me just mention one last thing, because I think, as Jan Willem said, that, you know, there's a lot of positive things that are coming out of this report as well, and we're seeing landowners connecting the dots with other public agencies and really building a network of folks that are real experts in restoration and wildlife management and land use, and that they're supporting one another, and it's sort of catching some momentum, and it's exciting to see.
Let me give you an example of another place that this planning process has been used by the county, and that is the La Bajada Ranch, formerly known as Santa Fe Canyon Ranch. It has been somewhat controversial, but the county bought about 450 acres that's over by La Cienega, and our county staff has used this planning process to do a land suitability analysis of the La Bajada Ranch so that we can determine what parts of the ranch do we need to save, what parts of the ranch do we need to put conservation easements on, and what parts of the ranch could possibly be developed or used for other things.
We're talking about the Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative with Charlie O'Leary from the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, Jan Willem Janssens, formerly of Earthworks, and Kathy Holian, Santa Fe County Commissioner. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, this is hard. This is hard for me to wrap my little brain around, and I imagine for some of our listeners it is too, because Jan Willem, earlier you said making a plan isn't like getting an architect to draw up plans and then building the house. Making a plan on something of this scale, which is a huge complex system, is an ongoing conversation, and it includes learning from your mistakes. How do you build that in? How do you build in the learning process?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to seeing planning, not like you said, as an engineering or an architectural approach to an end product after which you're just going to implement the drawings. This way of planning is a process and a collaborative learning process. So therefore you need to have a dialogue, and you need to develop tools and mechanisms for a dialogue. And I think that comes down to a true core of what democracy is all about. And so and that's also why Kathy is with us here, because and why we are so involved in doing this kind of work with local and state and federal government, because eventually this kind of planning is just not between a couple of conservation groups and landowners talking amongst each other. We need to come together to a collective learning process that helps us first understand why we do all this conservation and restoration work. To what purpose? And so that raises the question, well, what is it that we want to conserve or restore? What is so valuable? And 10 years ago, when development was rampant with 400 homes per year in Santa Fe County, we didn't even know what we were paving over. And several of us started to say, like, oh, wait a minute. We need to first understand what we have before we see a value in preserving it. And that started out a lot of these activities. And so, because some people had definitely a very good notion that there was something really important. And so the more we started studying and sharing that with people in many different meetings, in focus groups, in expert conversations, in radio conversations with you, Mary Charlotte, because it's probably the 10th time that I've been talking about it.
We've talked about this a lot, and I'm still trying to understand it.
And so we're trying to have an ongoing conversation, different ways of bringing people in by connecting them on the land with tree planting, all the way to making maps together, and then at county meetings, to eventually come to an understanding what is so important that we all treasure. What is this bounty of the landscape? Can we all put our arms around it in some way, or get some consensus, so that then when we have to make decisions where the next rail runner is going to go, or the next home, or the next initiative of, say, an investment in erosion control, where do we do this? And so that is why we have this plan, and it's a step forward maybe that leads then to other resolutions or to just landowner actions that can help us with the next step in that direction.
And it helps the county to prioritize as well as to what direction we're going to go in and what's most important to us and where do we want to put our resources.
I think underlying this conversation is also the question of how much do citizens trust their democratic process, trust their legislators and their commissioners and their public servants to do the right thing? Because we live in a world where there is really poorly thought out legislation and people voting yes or no on things that they don't understand in the first place. And it seems like what you're doing is a much bigger democratic process that draws in enough people across the spectrum and across, literally across the land, that it's more likely that good decisions will be made.
Yeah, I think so. And the county has really had a commitment to doing community plans. I don't know if you know this or not, but about a dozen communities in Santa Fe County have plans that they have come together to develop for their area. And I have found that it's an incredibly important way to get people in the community together to talk to each other and to talk about what they think is important about their community and what's worth preserving and what direction do they want to go in. It's an incredibly powerful process.
Balanced with that is also a process that's maybe as old, 10, 12 years now, that was led through the County Planning Department for county open space and land protection. And so around 1999, 2000, a community-based process was set up to identify areas that needed to be preserved through county purchase of those areas. And in the last 10, 15 years, a lot of strides have made by the county to identify areas that are of archaeological, cultural, viewshed importance and have been acquired with a bond that was passed in 2000, I believe.
I think we've had two bonds.
Okay. And so that has been an important instrument as well, besides the conservation easements that Charlie mentioned and the stewardship work and private landowner initiatives, towards the vision of this Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative, because a lot of these acquisitions and also trail easements were found that they should be established in the Galisteo Basin.
Yeah, I think what this is allowing us to do is be a lot more efficient in the work that's being done with conservation. That the more we can be informed about the resources that are out in a particular area, whether it's another community that has come together and put together their own community plan, it's a way to sort of show a list or an inventory of what are the community assets and what makes sense to really focus on, because we're all very busy and trying to do way more than we have time for. So how can we be efficient about this? How can we be fair about it? How can we be inclusive and learn about our homes, essentially?
So is this something that you have people, for example, in other... I mean, it's so new. It just came out, right? Because I was going to say, are people in other counties coming to Santa Fe and saying, let's see what you did so we can be inspired to do something similar in our area?
Well, we have had a lot of interest in the Sustainable Growth Management Plan that we just passed a little over a year ago, which incorporates a lot of these ideas. And a number of people have come to the county and asked to see the plan, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people in other areas of our state saying, wow, this is really groundbreaking.
Yeah, and I have had comments from national conservation biologists, because in 2008, as part of this process, we started to meet with special interest groups around wildlife, because we found that, especially regarding wildlife, we had really a lack of information. And when we started having meetings with local conservation groups and landowners and state agencies about wildlife, that came on the radar screen of statewide and national and international wildlife groups, and they said, wow, hey, oh, can we participate too? Because you guys, you're talking about something. The Galisteo Basin is a connective corridor. We often consider it a gap, basically, in big habitat areas in the United States. And there is a movement growing, and it has been for the last 20 years, to see how we can connect core areas of for wildlife all the way from Alaska to Mexico. And there are about six or seven major, you could say, gap areas where wildlife really has a challenge to cross from one core habitat area to another. And the nearest core habitat area that we all know here is the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, running all the way up into Colorado as a connective landscape for animals. But then they come to I-25 in Glorieta, Apache Canyon, and oops, there is I-25 to cross.
Right. What do they do?
Well, many are killed. There are just recent estimations made by Wildlands Network, a national organization, that 365 million vertebrates are being killed on our highways nationally every year. And that means about 91...
A million a day.
Million a day. And that goes all the way from salamanders to birds to coyotes to bear.
Vertebrates, right.
Vertebrates. So if you calculate that down, it is more than 90 animals per mile per day.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yes. And because we have a major wildlife corridor here, the police, Department of Game and Fish, private landowners know very well how many animals are every day being killed along I-25 between Santa Fe and Las Vegas.
Which is such a disaster for both the animals and the people who are hitting them. Not so much the salamanders, but if they're mammals, that can do a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah. There are 30,000 people killed every year as a result of collisions between big wildlife and cars.
And even if they're not killed, they do damage to their cars.
That's
and they're traumatized. So what are the... I know we talked, I think, was it with you about bridges or underpasses under highways? Mm-hmm. I mean, are these things being done? Are they being done
yes.
in New Mexico?
Actually, New Mexico is not as proactive as we would wish, maybe, but the success story in New Mexico is the Tijeras Canyon Passage, where in the last 10 years, a coalition of the Department of Game and Fish, certain conservation groups, and the Department of Transportation have come together to come up with strategies how to make the crossing of wildlife there safer for both the animals and motorists. And that is the most the best example in New Mexico, and wildlife car collisions have dropped enormously. I don't know exactly the figures, but with an order of magnitude, from if it were 90, then it's now 9 or something
right.
like that.
And I will just add that the Department of Transportation is now going to rebuild the interchange in Canyoncito on I-25. And so it's really important that we keep this in mind as they do the design for that interchange.
This is all pointing to something that I find fascinating, which is a new way of seeing the world, which is maybe the old way of seeing the world, which is that we're all sharing the earth. I mean, it's probably the way the native people who were here 5,000 years ago saw it, which was that we're all sharing it, except that now we have the power to completely mess it up, and we also have the power to actually share it in a rational way. And that's that's a lot of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think your question about are folks coming and asking about advice and how to do something like this in their area, you know, the devil's in the details. I think the real challenge is, okay, how do we go about actually implementing a plan such as this, or implementing a new way of looking at a landscape? And that's what's so challenging. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. And I think actually that there's not just one silver bullet. It's about finding the different solutions in the different communities. And I think that's what's so important and so powerful about the process that's been started with this initiative, is that, it's the dialogue. It's the living document. It's building trust and building that conversation to first figure out what we have, and then, okay, how are we going to make sure that it's protected and it's around for future generations?
When you say living document, there is the question of when that living document at some point becomes codified. It's no longer living. It becomes a set of rules that don't change that easily.
That's true. That's what happens when you pass an ordinance. It becomes law. And one thing that we do tend to do, though, in the county a lot, is to put in place a number of exceptions to various
right.
ordinances and so on. And then if you have too many exceptions over time, then your ordinance really isn't protecting you anymore.
Now, what do you do when people come to you, as I'm sure they do, and say, if you protect too much of this land, you put conservation easements everywhere, sure, we've got a better wildlife habitat and better ecosystem services, but we are still a growing community and we need more housing. And if you make it impossible for us to build housing, it drives up the price of housing and drives down the availability for people who want to come here.
Well, it's a good question, and I think that fortunately we haven't had that problem in the sense that a lot of the conservation work that we do is looking at really helping to conserve the special places, smaller pockets of land. And as we look at larger landscape, look at conservation on a landscape level, then we do have to look at what are those uses going to be over time and be more thoughtful about those protection efforts and say, and not have our head in the sand and say there's no more development, but okay, what kind of development, where is it going to be, and plan for that.
I think it is also that we are gradually discovering how much both the population, like you basically allude to, is a mosaic of different values and needs and how that changes over time. And the landscape is too. And so basically, it's figuring out how the mosaic of people's needs fits over the mosaic of the landscape and its values. And because these needs are changing, it's a dance. You need to really see this as an ongoing question and answer process, and our next generation may have different needs, and people who come after us with different economic opportunities or desires have different needs. And so figuring out how then the landscape, which is the setting within which we can accommodate those needs, can welcome the people in a way that we're not for the larger community and for the future actually destroying the value for which they are coming is so important. And I think that is what this document helps us to do, because in the past we had no information that would help us guide that process.
And we really need to get away from this either or way that we describe, well, are we either going to have economic development or are we going to have a clean environment? I mean, to look at those two separately is inaccurate, and we know that both affect one another. And we just need to get away from that kind of conversation and say that enhancing the natural world and the environment is good for all of us and increases the quality of life for all of us in the long run.
And as we've also talked about in previous programs, nobody wants to move to a place with a dirty environment.
Exactly.
So it doesn't help economic development in the long run. Well, okay, we're almost at the end of our program. I can't believe we've talked the whole show, but here we are with Charlie O'Leary, who is Executive Director of the Santa Fe Conservation Trust, Jan Willem Janssens from formerly Earthworks Institute, and currently he's an ecological consultant, and Kathy Holian, who's a Santa Fe County Commissioner. Now, if people want to get their hands on this document, the Galisteo Watershed Conservation Initiative, which is sitting in front of me on the Santa Fe Baking Company table, spiral bound with a very pretty picture on the front, and which looks a lot less bureaucratic than you might think when you flip through it, and there's actually a lot of pictures and a lot of beauty in this report. Is this available to the public?
It is. It's actually available on the Santa Fe Conservation Trust website, which is sfct.org. You can download a free copy, or you can send us an email, and we can get you a copy on a CD. I think we have CDs available for $5 per copy.
It's also in libraries, Mary Charlotte.
The Santa Fe Public Library?
The Santa Fe Public Library and the State Library.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you all very much for being with us and sharing today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having this conversation.
Yeah, thank you.